are listening to Up to Me Radio, the best in inspirational talk radio. It's up to me.
This is Beth, health and wellness expert, along with my buddy and co-host, Dr. Scott Clitheroe, and we are super excited everyone is here today. How are you doing, Scott?
I am doing great, Beth. It's raining here in Austin as we tape the show, and it's just nice to see that because I know other parts of the country aren't so lucky, and so a nice spring rain, it's good, beautiful here.
Oh, yeah.
The blue bonnets are out, you know.
I know.
Obviously a very difficult time, but people at least have a nice time of year to go outside and get some fresh air.
I know. Texas is known for their blue bonnets. I remember my first year living in the Houston area. Everybody was just like, oh, let's do the blue bonnet whole like field trip. And I'm like, what? And that's what people do. They will get in the cars and just go and take pictures. And I actually have a picture of me laying in the blue bonnets. I actually love that picture too, but that was from maybe what, 10, 15 years ago. And yeah, so anybody out there from other parts of the world, blue bonnets are part of Texas history.
Yes, and they're beautiful and they're still out, and then they go away and then the Indian paintbrushes come up and a few other flowers that I'm not familiar with. And there's a place here in Austin that Lady Bird Johnson, President Johnson's wife, created the wildflower nature center, and it's in South Austin. It's beautiful, and it talks about all the wild native flowers, mainly of Texas, but all over the country, and it's just a very peaceful place. Of course, right now it's closed, unfortunately, but you know, it's a great place to go. But yeah, I think that, again, we've said it before, Beth, but during this time of you know, concern and odd times, that it's good for all of our listeners to get outside when they can, still practicing social distancing, but get some fresh air, do some exercise, and enjoy the birds and the flowers for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Scott, today we're going to be talking to Becky Bro from American Cancer Society. And specifically, we're going to talk about the Relay for Life. People out there that don't know what Relay for Life is, it's a community-based fundraising event for the American Cancer Society. And each year, more than 5,000 Relay for Life events take place in over 20 countries around the world. And these events are held in local communities, university campuses, and even virtual campaigns. And the Relay for Life is the American Cancer Society's most successful fundraiser, as well as the organization's signature event. So I'm just super excited to bring Becky on the show, and I think she's here. So welcome, Becky, to our show. I am so glad you're here, and I can't wait to chit-chat with you.
Well, thank you so much for having me today, Beth and Scott. Great talking with you, too. I'm super excited to be here, and I can't wait to share about Relay for Life and talk with you guys and our listeners about Relay and about the American Cancer Society. So thank you so much for having me.
Oh,
it's great having you.
You know, Becky, I posted your bio on the show's landing page so folks out there can really get to know you. But can you briefly tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you became involved in Relay for Life?
Yes. Yeah, so I am from Southeast Louisiana, a town called Houma. It is south of New Orleans. So for those of you who think it's just New Orleans and the Gulf of Mexico, that's not the case. I promise there's still some land down there, and and that's where we're located. And so I live in Terrebonne Parish, actually a little bitty town. My home is in a town called Schriever, which is located between Houma and Thibodaux. And I was born and raised here. I graduated high school here. And I got involved with Relay for Life here in my community, actually the very first year at its inception. In 1996, we hosted our first Relay for Life event here in Southeast Louisiana. And Lafourche Parish and Terrebonne Parish were combined, and we relayed at Nicholls State University. located in Thibodaux. And back then in the 90s, it was an overnight event. And so relayers would come out, teams, you create teams, and they would come out and relay through the night, which the relaying through the night was a symbolism of the journey that a cancer patient goes through from the time of diagnosis into their survivorship. And so we would relay through the night. Someone from the team always stayed on the track walking, again, symbolizing that journey of the cancer patient. And with the sunrise the next morning came their survivorship. And so that's how I initially became involved with relay. My husband was working at the hospital. He was an x-ray tech actually at our local hospital. And we became involved on a hospital team. And that was my first experience in 1996. And I have not looked back since. I have been involved since then.
That's great. Do you have a personal connection to cancer? Is somebody in your family that had cancer?
I do.
Somebody you know real well?
Oh, yes, Scott. So I have many, many family members that have been impacted by cancer. And from my maternal grandmother, who was diagnosed with lung cancer when I was just 15 years old, my father, who is now a multiple time skin cancer survivor, my mom's twin sister, a breast cancer survivor. I have two first cousins. One is a cancer survivor. The other one, unfortunately, lost her battle to cancer in 2012, which impacted our family significantly. And she was probably one of the closest cousins I had. And that was very disheartening and heartbreaking for us. But yes, I have many, 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 many personal connections. Currently, my mother-in-law is a two-time stage 4 lung cancer survivor. And
wow.
She is still here with us after being diagnosed 5 years ago. She did traditional chemo and radiation the first round, and then it recurred. And then she went on an immunotherapy drug when it recurred instead of doing traditional chemo and radiation. And she is still with us this many years later after getting on the immunotherapy drug. It's been about 3 years now. So,
boy, she's tough. That's fantastic.
Many personal connections, but many, many great survivorships celebrated as well. A few losses, like my grandmother and my cousin, but more survivors. And so that's really what I focus on.
Yeah, for sure. And thank you so much for sharing that. So how has this personal connection to cancer, how's this impacted your life decisions and your passion to find a cure?
Well, I think from the very first day, my very first Relay for Life event that I attended way back in 1996, my maternal grandfather had just been diagnosed with colon cancer, like literally a week or two before that very first event. And attending that event and going through the luminary ceremony, which is, a ceremony where you remember and honor loved ones that have been afflicted with cancer, it impacted. First of all, it gave me the passion to find a cure even more than before. And I don't think I had that passion or knew that I had that passion in 1985 when my grandmother passed from lung cancer because I was 15 years old. It wasn't until I was older that I realized that, wow, and after having attended that first Relay for Life event and I saw what an impact it made on the people there, the survivors that were there. And my grandfather was now receiving treatment that ultimately saved his life. He was cured of colon cancer. And so how does that affect my life decisions now? Well, of course, I do try to stay healthy, exercise regularly. I try to eat healthy. And then I also do the screening. So, we all know that one of the best ways to to combat cancer is early detection. You know, those preventive measures, you know, leading a healthy lifestyle, not drinking too much alcohol, keeping your weight in check and things like that. But then also getting those screenings done early. So I said I had many family members. My mom's twin sister is a breast cancer survivor. So I started those screening mammograms at 35 instead of 40, even though 40 was the recommended age. My grandfather, colon cancer, I started those colonoscopies at the age of 40 instead of 50 because of the family history. And so, you know, there's been things along the way that have, you know, prompted me to be proactive, I guess, in a way, and to make sure that I try to take care of myself as much as I can. And hopefully I may not be one of those ones, you know, because it is so prevalent on both sides of my family, my mom's and my dad's. So.
Yeah. Well, that's so important, you know, screening is so important. Every time I take care of a patient with cancer, it's obviously sad and concerning. And yet when we know that the patient may have been better off if they had gotten the recommended screening, it just makes it doubly tough. You know, a patient comes in with colon cancer at 55 and never been screened or something like that. So to all you listeners, please talk to your doctor and get, make sure you're up to date on all your screening. You know, it depends on your age and gender and whatnot, but get it done, right? That's very important.
Yeah, absolutely, Scott. That's, you know, had I, and I had been told this by my gastro, my physician, that, so I'll share a little bit personal with you, but each time that I've had colonoscopies every 5 years now, since I'm 40 and I'll be 52 this year, each time I've had polyps. And so, you know, had I not started at that 40 age, you just brought up a very good point about a 55-year-old potentially coming in.
Yeah.
You know, if you ignore that family history or even what's happening with your own body, paying attention to your own body and signs and symptoms and things, you know, had I not done that and had I waited till 50, I could have potentially have had that colon cancer by the time I was 50 from leaving polyps unattended since the age of 40. And now the American Cancer Society's recommended age for that is 45. So,
Well, Becky, so you were volunteering and getting involved. What led you to join the American Cancer Society and get so active in the fundraising efforts?
Well, I, after having attended that first event in the 90s, I continued to participate as a team member on a hospital team. And then in the early 2000s, I started working at a medical facility. Actually, I became an office manager of a very busy cardiovascular practice. And the COO of our company then, he had actually chaired that very first Relay for Life event. He was working at the hospital, the local hospital in 96, and he chaired the event. So he was also very connected to the event. So when I started working for him at the medical practice, he asked me to create a Relay for Life team that our medical practice could participate in. So then I became, in the early 2000s, I became a team captain. So now I'm leading a team for my employer. And then from there, Scott, it just everything just evolved. By the mid 2000s, I had joined the planning committee for the local Relay for Life event. And then I started chairing and co-chairing the event after. So very actively involved as a volunteer while I was in medical office management, which I was in medical office management for 15 years. So yes, I continued to participate as a volunteer and chairing the event. And like I said, I've never looked back. It's a passion. It's something that I actually thrive on, I couldn't imagine myself doing anything else. And I'm very passionate about what I do.
I've known you for a couple of years now, Becky, and you are such a passionate, talented person, and I love your energy. You are like a hummingbird on Red Bull, but it's true. I know she, oh my gosh, she's just so much fun to be around. And I know you've done many things within the American Cancer Society, but what mm-hmm. roles have you served as a volunteer as well as a staff member?
So like I said a second ago, in the mid-2000s, I started chairing and co-chairing. I was on the planning committee. And in 2005-2006, I co-chaired with another volunteer who I'm very close to. I always tell her, Miss Jane, she's my mentor. She's my relay mama. She taught me everything that I know about relay. And 2007-2008, I chaired the event. Then in 2009-2010, I went back to co-chair. And then in 2011 and 2012, I went back to chairing the event. So like 4 years, chair and co-chair. And then in 2012, it was time to pass on the volunteer torch to someone else and to chair the event. But I stayed on the planning committee and actually served in numerous different roles on the planning committee between 2012 and 2014 before I started as a staff partner for the American Cancer Society. I was the media chairperson, the accounting chairperson. I was actively involved in the logistics of the event. So just really with my media experience, I did the TV talk shows, the radio talk shows as a volunteer. And so I just feel when I was approached, I was actually approached by the staff partner in my community at the time in 2014. She came to my office. She would always come to my office to turn in donations because I was the accounting lead at the time. And she came to my office one day and she says, do you like what you're doing? I was actually managing an outpatient imaging center at the time and had been doing that for going on 8 years. And again, you know, being in the medical field, I just think from early on as a child, I was just born to be a caregiver, I guess. That's what my passion was. And so, And so she asked me if I liked what I was doing. I'm like, yeah, absolutely. I love what I'm doing. I love seeing the patients and, you know, love the staff. And she goes, well, your position here in Tarot, I'm leaving. I'm taking another role with the American Cancer Society, and we need a staff person in Terrebonne. And I want to know if you will apply for it. And she caught me totally off guard. I was not expecting that at all.
Right.
I did. I thought, you know, what a great way to fulfill my passion than to be able to do this as my career and be able to do it every single day and at full time. And I have to tell you guys, I feel so rewarded. There is never a single day that I wake up and ever think that I don't want to go to work. Ever.
That's the goal, right? That's awesome.
Right. I absolutely love what I do. And I think that, you know, I don't know about a hummingbird on Red Bull, but I think it overflows into, you know, mm-hmm. into my work, into what I do every day. I think people see that I'm happy and that I love what I do. And I sincerely care about the volunteers because I was that volunteer for so many years. And I think becoming staff for an organization or an event, after having been in that volunteer role for so many years, you have that insight ahead of time of what a volunteer is going through, that they do have families and they do have jobs and they do have other things going on outside of your event. And so being sensitive to that and understanding, you know, when they may not answer you right away or, you know, whatever. Yeah.
How many volunteers do y'all have? I mean, for not only the Relay for Life, but just, you know, locally, how many do y'all have for American Cancer Society?
So currently we have thousands of volunteers currently in Terrebonne Parish for Relay for Life, because our volunteers consist of team captains for the teams that sign up to participate in Relay for Life. They consist of our sponsors. I have corporate sponsors who sponsor the event, but then they create a team and they participate in the event from a team fundraising level. And so they are volunteers. A lot of our survivors in our community are volunteers too. They help with the event. They form teams. We have survivor teams. Then I have my event leadership team, which this year I have an event leadership team that consists of 25 event leads. I have 74 registered teams. So when you start talking about registered teams, there's the team captain, but then they recruit 10, 15. I have some teams this year that have almost 100 participants on their one team, their company team. So then all of those that are joining the teams are also considered volunteers as well.
You know, as most of us probably know, this year's event, which I will be at, has been postponed. In fact, three of my friends are working on a barbecue pit to auction off, and I just want to give Ronnie and Alex and Kevin a big shout out for their support in designing, building, and engineering that barbecue pit. So thank you to them. But since the COVID scare, people and businesses are being creative with solutions and working out these problems. So how many people do you anticipate attending your event this year?
So Beth, that's really a loaded question this year. Mm-hmm. Normally I could just spout off in a heartbeat that we typically have from our community, we typically have 10,000 plus attendees at our event. We are the largest event in the state of Louisiana with regards to the number of attendees, number of teams, number of registered survivors. We are a top performing event in the country. We are one of the top 25 fundraising events in the country.
And that's impressive.
Yes, and so we're super proud. We also have one of the highest, if not the highest, customer service scores in the country as well. And we have maintained that for the last 5 to 6 years, those highest customer service scores. And that those are generated by surveys that are sent to all participants literally the week after our event. So our event's hosted on Saturday. The following Tuesday or Wednesday, our participants are going to get this survey about what their experience was like. And we have consistently in Terrebonne Parish had the highest customer service scores. And so when you ask how many people do I anticipate, typically I would say 10,000 plus. Some years when the economy was doing really well in 2015, we had over 12,000 attendants at our event. The last couple of years, it's been around 9 or 10,000, but that's typically how many we have in attendance. If you ask me this year, it's so hard for me to predict that. Like you said, Beth, we have rescheduled the event into June, actually, and we're going to a different location because our venue that we typically host the event at, it wasn't available on the dates that we were looking to reschedule to. So, you know, I'm keeping my fingers crossed and hoping that if we have half, I'm going to be super ecstatic. You know, if we can draw a crowd from our community, provided that the safety of everyone is okay, and it's okay for us to do that again, I'm hoping we can get 5,000 or so there this year with the changes.
Right.
Well, that's impressive numbers, and I'm sure that these folks who are giving you these high ratings are going to make it back no matter what. It sounds that's very impressive numbers. You know, I've never done one. I'm looking forward to doing one. You're motivating me for sure, but can you tell us a little bit about what exactly happens at a Relay for Life event?
Yeah, so Scott, as I mentioned a second ago, you know, we have teams that sign up. So our teams are local businesses, schools. We have many schools, over 20 participating schools in the event. You create a team and you actually fundraise all year long. So our teams are hosting fundraisers all year, whether it's an Easter basket raffle or it's a plate lunch hosted at a local business, or a lot of our teams do football pools in the fall during football season. We have one school team that does a daddy-daughter dance every year for Valentine's Day. So it's crazy, but they raise over $5,000 at this Valentine's Day dance for daddies and daughters every year for Valentine's Day. So the fundraising goes throughout the year, and they create their teams by registering on our website. As they turn in their donations from their fundraising, we post that to their teams. And so there's some competitiveness that goes on all year long on who's raising the most and who's, you know, who's on top and whatever. And then at the event, we all come together, all this year-long fundraising comes together, and we put together our event. And just to give you an idea, so I said how many people attend, we actually have named streets on our event. So we have four streets. Our presenting sponsor gets a named street. And then one of our sponsorship levels for our event is a street sponsorship that we sell for $2,500. And a company, one of our schools does it every year. They want to have their name on the street. So you might be on such and such drive or so and so boulevard, and you actually get issued a house number too. So you might be 101 whatever boulevard or whatever. And so when we put out a map, an actual map that has everybody's address and team name, we put out a schedule of the event on who's selling what at their campsite. So when they're out there the night of their event, they're hosting fundraisers at all their individual campsites. And I will tell you that the most successful thing that you can do night of event is sell food. Because when you bring 10,000 people to a parking lot for several hours, you're going to want to eat, right? So some great Cajun cooking going on in the parking lot on the night of the event. And so we highlight four ceremonies during the event. We have our opening ceremony, which is where we have the presentation of colors. We have someone that sings the national anthem. Our parish president gets on the stage and welcomes the whole community. Our presenting sponsor gets on the stage and talks a little bit about Relay for Life and why he's so passionate about it and thanking the community for coming. And then we have our teams take an opening lap around our track. And so around the streets of the event, they walk around and they carry banners, whether it's a school banner or a business banner. And typically their banners are decorated according to the theme of the event. So this year's theme is Game On, The Cure Starts Here. And so it's a gaming theme. It's Monopoly. It can be video games. It can be sports games. It can be whatever. Our teams will decorate their banners and their campsites according to the theme. So that's our opening ceremony. A couple of hours later, we go into our second ceremony, which is our survivor ceremony or celebration. That's where we gather our 300 plus registered survivors at the stage. We give them all butterflies. We have a cancer survivor get on the stage and tell their journey with cancer. And then our survivors do a butterfly release where we release hundreds and hundreds of butterflies into the air, symbolizing their survivorship and their life, which is very impactful. And then they take to the track or the streets and they walk. And while they're walking, we have local physicians from both of our hospitals that are reading all the survivors' names as they're walking in that ceremony. Their caregivers join in the second lap and then their entire family. So it's three laps and they have their caregivers and their family members join in. Then our third ceremony is our luminary ceremony, which is the most impactful ceremony of the evening, I have to say. This is where we bring down all the lights in the parking lot. So it's very dark. And all you see are these luminary bags, these white bags that line all four streets, line our track. All these bags have been purchased for donations. But are decorated by all the families in our community that have had someone that's been affected with cancer, afflicted with cancer. You do a luminary bag in honor of a loved one who's still with us or in memory of someone who's gone before us. We have candles inside the bags, so the bags are lit up. The luminary ceremony starts with Amazing Grace played by the bagpipes. And then we go into an actual video production where we have a huge screen hanging from the top of our stage, and we put in videos of all cancer survivors and caregivers in our community, as many photos as we can get. And we have a series of three or four songs that are playing in the background that are, you know, inspired by what we're doing. and we play those songs. We have the photographs up on the screen, and then our songs kind of, you know, we start off kind of solemn because we're remembering our loved ones that have gone before us, but then we gradually go higher and more upbeat with our music, because then we want to go into the celebration part of our survivors. And then our Luminaria ceremony ends with a huge fireworks display, which is just so super impactful. I got goosebumps talking about it. And so that's our Luminaria ceremony. And then our fourth ceremony is our closing ceremony, where we again thank everyone for coming out. And we give out some awards, like best decorated campsite, best food item, best banner. We give out some awards, and then we'll do a little bit of fundraising, but we typically don't know how much we fundraise that night until into the wee hours of the morning, usually midnight or after. And so we typically do our big announcement. We'll announce at the beginning of the event how much we've raised prior to that day, but we typically don't announce the final numbers until the following week. And then we kick off, we have a band, a big band. We have an entertainment sponsor that hires a big band to come in, and we do like a free concert for the community from 9 to 11. And that's
our ceremony. That is a heck of an evening right there.
It is. We have another band that actually kicks off the event, and they play throughout the event up until that Luminaria ceremony. You know, they play off and on because we're making a lot of announcements, right? And we're doing all these different ceremonies. So there's a lot of asking the band, you know, can we cut in? We have an official MC for our event that happens to be one of my first cousins. He is the brother of my other two cousins that were both impacted with cancer. One's a survivor and one of them is not here with us anymore. So he's very engaged and supportive of the event, and he MCs our event every year in memory of his one sister and in honor of another sister.
Yeah. Well, I'm actually planning on being at that event. And Scott, I would love it if you could actually pop over with me to HOMA. But Becky, can you tell us a little bit more, like what day is the event this year, the when, the where, all of that good stuff?
Sure, I would love to. So our event was originally scheduled to take place on April the 25th, and we all know we're staying at home right now, so we can't do that. So we've rescheduled to Saturday, June 20th. It is actually Father's Day weekend this year, and after toiling over a few different dates, our event leadership team decided on that Saturday and figured that everyone could spend Sunday with their fathers still, even though the event was on Saturday evening. It's going to be hosted this year. It's typically at the HOMA Terrebonne Civic Center, but we've moved locations this year due to the availability of dates. So it's going to be held at our mall, at Southland Mall, which they have tons of parking, a huge parking lot. We're super excited because the mall is donating the space. And so we're happy about that because, of course, we always try to make the best use of donor dollars and save money anywhere that we can. So it's going to be at Southland Mall and June 20th. And at the same time, it's going to be 3 p.m. to 11 p.m. And all those ceremonies that I just talked about, Scott and Beth, all that's going to still play out the exact same way.
You're wonderful.
That's going to be so much fun. And again, whatever it is, it'll be worth the wait. I'll tell you, that's just what an impressive thing you've got going. I wanted to just ask, you know, how can listeners get involved? You know, specifically our listeners who live in Southeast Louisiana, but I guess also I'd like to, you know, have you tell us if we're motivated to help, you know, where can we find a Relay for Life near us?
Sure. So as you mentioned earlier, on the call, Beth, you know, we have thousands of events all over the country and all over the world, actually. You can typically find a local Relay for Life event in almost any major city across the country, and even some rural communities like us. You'll find some Relay for Life events. So typically, if you go to our website, relayforlife.org, you can search by zip code and find an event that's close to you. If you wanted to get involved in my specific event, then you would search the Relay for Life of Terrebonne Parish. And you can do that either by Googling it, you know, on the internet or on Facebook. We also have a Facebook page as well. And I'd like to go back for just a second, Beth, to something that you mentioned early on about this being our signature fundraising event for the American Cancer Society. You mentioned virtually that we have some virtual campaigns. And so now more than ever, we have had some of our events across our communities that have had to go virtual this year just because it just wasn't possible to reschedule for whatever reason. And so I'd like to encourage everyone out there listening that if you do have a local event close to you, to consider looking that event up and seeing if you can potentially participate from a virtual perspective, because, you know, our most vulnerable people, you know, patients and survivors are going to need our help even now more than ever. And so, you know, I encourage everyone to get involved and to look up your own local event. And if it's rescheduled like ours, I would love to invite all of you to Southeast Louisiana so you can eat some of the best food you've ever eaten in your entire life. I mean, you know, you can't go wrong if you show up in Terrebonne Parish at Southland Mall on June 20th. I promise you. But in the event that's a little
You won't go home hungry, right? You won't go home hungry.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And so anyway, if that's not a possibility, I highly encourage everyone on the call, you know, please consider getting involved with your local event or one close by. And like Beth said earlier, you don't have to physically be there in person. You can actually participate from a virtual perspective. All of our events do fundraising on Facebook, and we can actually collect donations right there on our websites too.
Well, Becky, you know, I'd like to ask you just if you could briefly, I mean, I think everybody's heard of the American Cancer Society, but, you know, what an incredible organization. Could you just give us a brief summary of, you know, what y'all do? I mean, I know you help support cancer survivors and fund research, but can you kind of give us an overview of all the things y'all do?
Sure. So let me just say that a lot of people are not aware that we are the second largest funder of cancer research in the entire nation, second only to the federal government. So you know, the government being the number one funder of cancer research and the American Cancer Society being the second largest funder. And we fund cancer researchers everywhere. We have one right now, and we have a research grant being funded right here in Louisiana. You know, they're all over the country. And so we've seen, due to the advances and the things that we've found through the research, we've seen a decline in deaths related to cancer by 29% since 1991. We just got the new information out this year in January, Scott. We saw the largest single decrease in cancer deaths between 2016 and 2017, 2.2% decrease in a one-year time frame. And so I attribute that to the research that's being funded by the American Cancer Society. And so what do? We fundraise. We have partnerships with big organizations like the NFL and the NBA. We have a Coaches Versus Cancer campaign that is very successful on the collegiate level. And we have kind of put that out in high schools as well too. We have the Crucial Catch partnership with the NFL every fall, where you'll see that in October on all the football fields, the Crucial Catch information. We not only have Relay for Life, we have Making Strides Against Breast Cancer. We have galas that we do across the nation as well in many different communities. I actually implemented a gala in my community in the fall 3 years ago. And those galas are an honoree gala platform where there are people that are nominated in your community for what they do in the community. They could be survivors, they could be caregivers, they could just be community leaders that are supporting the efforts of the organization. So there's just so many different ways to raise the money to fund the research. But we also don't just fund research. We have our Hope Lodge locations across the country as well, where we provide free housing, free nights of stay where patients are receiving cancer treatment. So for us here in Terrebonne Parish, I'll just share this statistic with you. We actually qualify when we have patients from our community that go to the New Orleans area for their treatment. And their treatment might take them there for many different reasons. It could be the oncology specialist. It could be a particular a surgeon, a specialty surgeon or whatever. They'll go to New Orleans to receive their treatment. They can stay at our Hope Lodge in New Orleans free of charge for the duration of their treatment. I know people from my own community that have stayed at the Hope Lodge in New Orleans for 6 months to a year. And in 2018 alone, our Hope Lodge in New Orleans provided over 55,000 free nights of lodging to the Terrebonne Parish residents.
Wow.
We just opened up our Hope Lodge in Houston, right next to MD Anderson. We're super excited about that because we do have, you know, there's people from all over the country, cancer patients that travel to MD Anderson. And so we actually, that Hope Lodge is twice the size of the one in New Orleans. Our New Orleans one is a 34 room. I believe the one in Houston is over 60 rooms available to cancer patients there. So our funding funds those entities as well. And I shared this with you and Beth before we got on the call, but I'd love to share it with our listeners too, in light of the current COVID crisis that we're all experiencing. We, the American Cancer Society, has repurposed every one of their Hope Lodges across the country to provide a safe place for healthcare workers to go and stay, whether it's that they need to quarantine away from their family for 14 days or they're just resting in between shifts. All of our Hope Lodges have been repurposed for healthcare workers across the country.
Just fantastic. Mm-hmm. Well, Becky, your enthusiasm is infectious, and we really appreciate you coming on the show to talk about what you're doing. And not just the information about American Cancer Society and the Relay for Life, but I'd like to thank you for, you know, just sharing your enthusiasm. And, you know, my hope for my kids and, you know, and everybody is that we can find something that we're passionate about and that we get up every morning and go to work, you know, loving it. And I'm so happy you found that. And I hope that our listeners can find some motivation in that. So really, again, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I've enjoyed it. And it's been such a pleasure to be able to talk with both of you and to share this with your audience. I'm super excited.
That's great. And like Beth mentioned, we'll have all the information on our landing page, how to get involved. And really, again, thank you so much. And with that, we'll be back right after this commercial break.
There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects with household cleaning spray. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
And we're back from commercial break. And thank you, everyone, for staying with us. And Scott, isn't Becky amazing?
Yes, that was a great interview, and her enthusiasm, Beth, is just so infectious. I just was so impressed with her enthusiasm, and what a blessing to find something to do with your life that brings you so much satisfaction, and she's so good at it. That was just fantastic.
I know. I just want to hang out with her because she's just that lovely, energetic. Yeah. So I get it. I get it.
Mm. Well, and you know, Beth, you know, this is one of my many passions, and is that I'm glad she brought it up, but you know, I just think it's a great time to remember for all of our listeners that we need to keep up to date with our cancer screening, whether it's skin cancer or colon cancer or breast cancer or prostate cancer. Everybody, please check in with your primary care doctor and make sure that you're on track for all of your various cancer screening guidelines, because it's so important. It really is.
Yeah. And to let our audience know, I'm really hoping that on June the 20th, because I plan on being there and doing a show a little different with actual video with the bands and live with Becky and participants and companies. And so I'm really hoping that does happen. So that'll be exciting.
Oh, can't wait for that. That'll be great. That's coming up in June, right?
June 20th.
The Father's Day weekend,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, great. I just want to thank our audience for tuning in every week. And don't forget to listen and give us a review in any of the following apps. So iHeartRadio, Google Play, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and you can listen to us while in your car on TuneIn. All you have to do is search for us on Up to Me Radio. So until our next show, everyone have a healthy and safe day. We will see you next time around.